You're listening to KPDO 89.3 FM, community radio for Pescadero and the South Coast.
Good evening and welcome to Pescadero Pesos. This is Catherine Peary. My guest today is Janina Pawlowski. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. First, we have the World News Roundup for Economic News. And then we will be getting to a very interesting interview with Janina. In World Economic News, European governments are making deep cuts in defense spending to help balance budgets. Many European leaders are facing strikes and protests because of social service cuts. Obama is on his way to the G20 conference in Toronto, which will be held tomorrow and Sunday, and he is expected to ask for increased stimulus spending internationally. In the USA, after more than 20 hours of debate, Democrats and White House officials agreed on legislation that would transform financial regulation. The Wall Street Journal's analysis is that big banks like Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan Chase lose out on trading and derivatives profits. The new regulations create an independent consumer protection bureau based in the Fed, which will create rules for bank, debit, and credit card charges. Finally, the news about the Dow. The Dow was down about 100 points overall for the week, to end at 10,143.81. In other news, California employs the largest concentration of farm workers in the country, according to the Department of Agriculture, and the state will receive the biggest share of a $78 million grant to provide employment training and support services to migrant and seasonal farm workers nationwide. California will get $20 million of that. Pescadero's elementary and middle schools will benefit from a $416 million federal grant to help 188 low-achieving California schools. The dollars are dependent on implementing one of four approaches to turning the schools around. Just how much comes to Pescadero is not known at this time. And a special little sports report. As most people know, the U.S. team scored a goal in the final minute of its World Cup soccer match with Algeria and moved to the second round. So we may actually have a contender in the World Cup. I mean, it's kind of amazing. Okay, you're listening to KPDO, and I am going to do a underwriting message here. Local underwriting. At this time, we would be normally airing an underwriting message, but we don't have one scheduled for this break. Put public radio to work for you. Promote your business on KPDO 89.3 FM. Underwriting messages build community awareness and connect your business to our South Coast audience. All contributions are tax deductible. For more information, visit kpdo.org/underwriting or call 650-646-KPDO or email Daniel at kpdo.org. Okay, now to introduce our guest and give everybody a little bit of an introduction to a new member of our community. So, Janina, why don't you tell us how you got here? What's going on in your life?
Oh, how I got here. You know, I started coming to Pescadero just as a visitor, I'd say maybe two and a half years ago. Just discovered the town. I think I went to Half Moon Bay and I kept driving and ended up out here. And I grew up in Rochester, New York, which is a very rural community, and was raised between a dairy farm and a fruit orchard that I have to confess I used to steal fruit from. I tell my daughter about that now, how guilty I feel with small farmers. But, and my aunt had a farm which was really just I would describe it kind of like the modern day polyface farm that is in Virginia that has become famous through the Omnivore's Dilemma book and the movie Food, Inc. But it was really a farm that had animals. You know, we had, well, my aunt had cows and she had poultry. Mm-hmm. She didn't have horses because she felt they didn't really contribute that much. She had tractors instead, turkeys, and then a lot of fruits and vegetables. But it was, you know, you had the combination of all the animal inputs going right directly back into the soil and producing healthy food for people.
But was she accidentally organic or anything like that?
I don't think she was organic. She probably used DDT or something. It was the night. I'm going to be 50 in August, so this was the 1960s and early 1970s. But my family is from Poland, and my aunt was a very tough woman who was actually in a concentration camp in Germany, in Bergen-Belsen. So she was a very Polish. We are not Jewish, but she was put into the camp because she spread butter on a painting of Adolf Hitler.
Oh wow!
Because she couldn't
abide him.
She couldn't abide him, and she was anyway. That's kind of a deviation. But I was raised on farms. And as a result, I have always wanted to do something with farming. I got my undergraduate degree from Cornell University in agricultural economics, and then went down a different career path in my life to became a mortgage broker and started an internet company. And
I think I've heard a little bit about that.
A little bit.
I think that was kind of a rumor going around that maybe you'd started an internet company.
Yeah, I did. And that was really because I wanted to be at home with my son, who's now 20 years old. So I became a mortgage broker after getting my agriculture degree, then got an MBA in finance, marketing, and accounting.
Wow.
And then ended up getting pregnant and staying at home as a mom. And I wanted to do something that I could earn money at home and be with my child. So I went down the path of becoming a mortgage broker.
That's who all our key employees are. I mean, we have all our key people work out of their homes, and they typically started as moms working at home, but then they, you know, now they're highly credentialed people who, you know, their kids are grown, and we have now new employees
that's great.
That have grown into the business. So I really know what you're talking about, but how did you, I understand that it was a very big success. If I'm hearing right about, you know, your, what was, the, can you share the name of your enterprise?
Sure. the company was called Elon,
elon.com.
Yeah, and we were really just, my partner, his name is Chris Larson, and myself were mortgage brokers. But we got into the business and saw that there were lots of people making money off of the consumer. So you had the secondary mortgage market and then too many layers and then the consumer who was being
robbed
by loan agents who were making too many points and selling the wrong products to the consumer. So I think that because we had, both of us had MBAs in finance, we kind of looked at the transaction and said, what is going on? The consumer is not getting the right product. They're being overcharged. And at the same time, our loan officers were making more money than us, which is what really made us angry. Because we felt that we owned the company. Why are these guys making more money than we're making? But it was really because they didn't have the integrity. Once they quoted an interest rate, if the interest rates fluctuated, they just charged the customer more. Whereas we used to honor our quote. And so we ended up making very little money. But then the internet came along, and we were given a free, it was a free DSL line into our office in Palo Alto.
Wow.
And this company just called us up and asked us if we wanted to be hooked up to the internet. We didn't know what the internet was.
Huh.
So we said, sure. And so they put in this DSL line, and then suddenly we had, you know, a browser. We had a Netscape browser. It was beginning of the internet, and we realized that there was a way to eliminate the loan officer, because we decided that if you can put up a website, then you can quote interest rates directly to the consumer. There will be fewer people in between. The consumer is going to get a better product, and they'll save money.
Brilliant.
So we did that. We set up a website and then we forgot about it for about 3 weeks and then logged into our email and there were like 30 loan applications
Oh, wow.
in there. And we realized that it was actually going to work.
There's something here. And all those people stuck around after the 3 weeks? Or
they stuck around because it was really the early adopters. Oh. We had Stanford professors. We had people that were economists. We had early some of the venture capital people. And they kind of coached us and told us what we were doing right, what we were doing wrong. And
it was awesome.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. They pretty much taught us, you know, this is what we would like to have. And of course, we were programming on our own, so we didn't know
awesome.
How to give them what they wanted. But we kind of we fumbled along until we were so broke. I was about $60,000 in debt, and almost lost my home in Sunnyvale. I was living in Sunnyvale, got divorced during this time period, and was kind of at wit's end. And then we finally were able to get. Well, we had a choice. We were down to $5,000. And we were trying to decide if we should pay the rent or get a billboard on 101.
And did you get the billboard on 101?
We got the billboard on 101.
Oh,
and then the VCs must have, you know, they're all on Sand Hill Road,
that's
and they were
it.
Cutting down University Avenue to get onto 101 South. And enough of them saw the billboard that they ended up funding the company.
That's wonderful. What a great story.
It was a bad time. My son still asks, if he notices that, you know, the Comcast cable's not on, he'll ask, "Mom, are we losing our cable again?" Because it was rough. It was very rough.
Yeah, starting a business is very hard. I don't care who you are or when you start. It's really, really tough. So You did become successful, and that enterprise lasted for how long?
Oh, let's see. We started the mortgage company that became eLoan in 1992. Mm-hmm. We did not get funding until 1998,
wow.
which was the day I quit smoking. I was smoking a pack of cigarettes a day until the day we got funded. Marlboros, and I still miss them. and then we took the company public in, I think it was 2000.
Okay, so that is what made the money for you. Because that's what happened to a lot of people.
Public.
Yeah, they went public, and that's really what did it for them.
Absolutely.
And then you lose
Absolutely.
Control of the company, right?
Yes, yes. And it's usually your own fault.
Yeah.
So did you
make money, though, in the process? Did you actually get, for yourself, did you get paid back?
Yes, I did. I did make money, and I think a lot of people in the company made money.
Mm-hmm.
I think the group that made the most money was probably Goldman Sachs.
Oh, of course. That's what happens.
And, you know,
that's how they make the big bucks.
Yes, yeah. They do. And in some ways, you know, they take risk, but in other ways, you wonder if it's appropriate. But it's not... I think that, you know, we have the tendency to think who should make money and who shouldn't make money. And you hear people like Stephen Colbert or Jay Leno talking about, gee, how can Goldman Sachs make so much money? But then you have to pause and say,
but only they could.
You're Jay Leno.
Yeah, right.
A lot of money.
Exactly. There's a good point.
Yeah.
All right. Let me make this public service announcement. I'll make a little transition to talking about your Pescadero venture. Okay. And we may have to take a little break here. Okay, do you have a jalopy, hoopty, beater, or POS car taking up space in your driveway? Is it time for you to move on? Donate your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, or camper to KPDO 89.3 FM. All you need to do is call Vehicles for Charity, 800-833-3006, or 866-628-2277, and then sit back and relax. The pickup will be arranged for you free of charge, and you'll receive an income tax deduction. For more information or to complete a donation form online, visit www.vehiclesforcharity.org. We're going to take just a little break, and then we'll be right back.
Too much. You look pale.
foolish. Got it.
Our guest tonight is Janina Pawlowski. And Janina, let me ask you what everybody wants to know. I think we understand that you bought Savasco Ranch here up on Cloverdale.
Yes, that's right. And I haven't bought it yet, actually.
It's closing.
We're close to closing.
Okay.
July 1st.
Okay. And so what is it that you plan to do with that? And I understand you have a nonprofit or a trust that goes with that. So can you give us some information or background on that?
Sure. The farm, the property, we plan on starting with the whole objective of the organization is to bring more local food back into San Mateo County. And I think that there are a lot of organizations that have already done, they've kind of been shoveling the driveway, getting, you know, going out there and doing work like Pie Ranch and Blue House and the Marquee Guards with grass-fed beef. There's lots of people in this area that are really working hard with local food.
And we'll talk about that in a minute. We'll explore that in a minute.
But
about
we would like to start with poultry production and grass-fed beef and sheep.
Okay.
So, again, we want to mimic a little bit of what is done more, as far as I know, on the East Coast with the polyface model, which is pastured poultry. So you have chickens in... They call them chicken tractors, but they're in devices and you're moving the chickens onto fresh pasture every day.
Oh, I actually have seen that over on Cloverdale. There's a little place across from Double Dog Ranch.
They are also doing that, yes.
Now, what's the name of that place? Do you remember? I'm trying to think. What is the place that's right across from Double Dog Ranch? It's a little teeny place. Maybe somebody can call us and tell us what that is.
Yeah, I don't know. I would love to meet with them.
This is their second anniversary or their first anniversary. I mean, they've only been there for a short period of time, but I've noticed them doing that. So you have this little chicken coop that travels.
Yes.
And you take it on the grass, and then once they've eaten up all the bugs and grass right there, you move it someplace.
You move it. You're supposed to move it every day to keep them on fresh pasture. And, of course, you have to learn. I mean, for us, it's going to be the learning curve of trying to figure out with the rains and with the weather. I know it's not easy to do farming, so I don't want to kind of simplify it, make it sound easy. But that's the beginning of what we'd like to do.
I know somebody else is doing that. Have you talked to Kate? Kate Meyer Haas?
No, I know her, though.
I think she's got a mobile, I don't know what you call it, chicken coop kind of thing. It's really a big, looks like a castle for chickens that's on wheels. And she kind of, it's also, she's now got her 30 chickens or whatever they're called. And she's in the. She's got the ability to move them around on her, I guess it's a 10-acre plot or so. So similar.
And is she doing that for eggs or for the meat?
Oh, you couldn't. I wouldn't know. But I can ask Kate. I mean, she's somebody you should talk to.
Yeah, we've been emailing each other. So.
Yeah, she probably.
I didn't know she was doing that.
Yeah, she's all excited about it. She's really into it. And her other favorite subject is composting, which I really don't know that much about. But for her, it's like I think she wants to get an MBA in composting.
And I do have to talk to her. Yeah.
It's
there's
her
a lot of opportunity
subject.
In composting.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll take your word for that.
There is.
But, okay. And so you also do want to do grass-fed beef.
Grass-fed beef and also sheep.
Okay.
To bring some sheep back. And that's really, I know that there are places in California that have sheep, but every time I go into a store in San Mateo, which is where I live now on the other side of the hill, all the sheep is coming from Australia or New Zealand.
Really?
And it's difficult to find local sheep, local lamb.
Oh, I see, because it's just not here. It's just not built.
I think the demand probably is exceeding the supply of what we have in this area.
Okay, maybe that's it.
Or it could be that it's just too hard and everyone's not crazy like me.
Well, you know, who knows what the situation is, but I've been to Wales and to those very rocky hills that are on the west side of England, and they have, I mean, to me it's a very similar kind of weather pattern.
Right.
You know, it's rainy and it's a little bit cool, and so I would think they'd fit right in because you've got this constant grass growing.
Yeah, I think part of the problem in California that I've heard is that when you have the animals, it's difficult to find a place to process them.
Oh.
So there aren't a lot of, to use the French word, abattoirs that are local to be able to process.
Oh.
Abattoir is a fancy word for a slaughterhouse. I heard that was one of the rumors about me, was that I was going to come here and build a giant slaughter facility.
Oh,
that's
no.
what someone asked me. And anyone who knows me would know. That's not it.
You know, I read this really interesting book, totally unrelated to this subject, except that the woman, it's an autistic woman who wrote the book, and her specialty is making the last moment for a cow a heavenly moment before they get slaughtered. Have you heard of this woman?
Yes, I have an opinion on that, actually.
Well,
her name is Temple Grandin.
That's it. I read her book. She's an amazing person. The fact that she's autistic and has done so much, I think, is pretty amazing.
Yes, I think she is really speaking now on behalf of the giant confined animal units, the big CAFOs.
Mm.
So if I were a lobbyist, if I could come up with Temple Grandin, I'd be happy to say I invented her. I know that she is a real person.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that she was diagnosed at some point with autism. However, I think that the autism diagnosis might have been a little bit inaccurate in her case, because if I've seen films of her and she has written books and she's quite
fully functioning.
Well,
she actually goes through how she got that way, and Asperger's there's a wide spectrum of ability in that particular thing. But, you know, not talking about that so much, and I don't support the kind of employers she works for, but the idea of a clean and merciful kind of death for a cow or a sheep does appeal to me.
It does. It does to me too.
You know, there's a lot of people who would like that idea.
Yeah, I think in the case of what the large facilities that Temple Grandin has helped design, those are the facilities where the cow is going down a conveyor belt and then it's lifted up and something happens to it. So I don't know how peaceful that last moment really is.
It's very quick, apparently. It's like a shot to
terrifying
the,
to me.
Yeah. I'm a vegetarian, so I don't eat meat, but I don't have anything against other people doing what they think is right, but I do think, you know, doing it in a way that's the least harmful is obviously a better thing. So I'm not sure if those standards apply, you know, in the world of grass-fed beef or how that works, or grass-fed sheep, for that matter.
Yeah, I think that it depends on what you design. If you know, there are these large facilities, and something that I heard was, I think 85% of our meat is coming from four producers in this country.
I've heard that too. Yeah.
So that is, you know, pork, beef, lamb, everything is really coming from four companies, which I think is a little bit scary.
Yeah.
When you talk about food safety, I don't know how you can control food safety by having all the animals, they're all similar, they're genetically similar, and they're all being treated with antibiotics and then being bred to resist antibiotics, which I think is part of the problem for people. I mean, we're getting things that, you know, you treat your child with antibiotics, with two or three different antibiotics, because they can't tolerate certain bacteria. And I think it's because of the way animals are being raised.
Right. But, and so having grass-fed beef kind of eliminates that whole use of antibiotics.
It does.
I saw Food Inc. not very long ago. Kathy Webster actually sponsored it here at Native Sons, and a lot of us went to go see it. Do you know Kathy? Kathy Webster?
I don't.
She's the person who did our local food program. She's gotten people to donate, you know, locally produced organic food here, and we've got a great local food program for our kids, which we're trying to kind of spread the word.
Okay.
And I know that they're doing an alliance with the people in Davenport right now who also have a neat organic food program for their schools. So we're trying to get that as the norm for San Mateo County and beyond, which would help us here, but also it's just for the health of the kids, you know. But she's
that
another person
great.
You should know. And she was funded by Tomcat Ranch. Have you heard of them?
I have heard of them.
And they have a Tomcat Educational Foundation, which funded her position at the school so that she could have the time to do this.
Oh, that's
which is
great.
Very cool.
That is very cool.
Yeah, and they have a ranch right off of Pescadero Road near the North Street and Pescadero Road, right in that area up there across from Phipps Ranch.
Okay.
And so you should get to know those people as well.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of people here trying to do innovative things, and I think that the organic food movement is just one little piece of it. The other part is community. Locally produced food is a very big deal here. And we have a newsletter that they produce called Locally Produced, and it's a monthly email newsletter. I don't know if you're on that list at this point, but, you know, I could definitely forward you that newsletter so that you could get on that list and get to know those people.
Okay.
Because,
that sounds good.
Yeah, I think that would be, you know, a good introduction for you. There's so many people trying to do something similar.
Right. I think that's what attracted me to this community, that there are lots of different things going on. I mean, everyone's doing a piece of this already.
Mm-hmm.
And
In a
different way.
Like Pie Ranch has their educational farm.
Yes.
People come down. It's almost like a tourist attraction. They come to see how you make a pie from scratch, literally, like scratching in the dirt, getting the wheat out of there, or however they do it. And then, you know, you've got Harley Farms, and then the goat cheese. And, you know, Phipps Ranch has been here forever, and they have you pick stuff. And then down here, Swantonberry Farm, which is a wonderful little place that has a nice little cafe, and you can go pick organic produce and organic strawberries. So it's just like, this is the little mecca all of a sudden.
I think so.
For the, you know, organic and then grass-fed beef. Now, isn't somebody else doing grass-fed beef? Who is that?
Eric and Donica Markigard.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're in San Gregorio, I think.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they have a few, 300 or so cows, or is that...
You know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure of the number.
Okay.
I'm not sure of the number. I know that they're leasing some land in the area here.
So is your goal then just the one farm, or what's your overall vision? Because I think what's the name of the trust that you established?
What I decided to do was to start a trust that's called PLANT, which is, it stands for the Preservation of Land for Agricultural Needs Trust.
Okay.
And what I'm hoping to do is to be able to lease land. There are other organizations like POST, Peninsula Open Space Trust, that years ago, I think, you know, probably 30 years ago, looked at the coast and said, we don't want this to be developed. We don't want this to look like, you know, Los Angeles or, you know, these areas further south that are completely overdeveloped. And therefore, we have a plan for this area. And I think they've done a fantastic job in terms of accomplishing their goals. And I think that the difference probably, you know, I can in no way compare myself to that organization. It's a huge, very successful group of people. But I think that this organization, what I'd like to do is look at the land and say, where would we like to see farms?
Mm-hmm.
Where should people live?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if people are farming, this expectation that they're going to live in, you know, a yurt is a great thing. I just bought one today to get started.
I could talk to you for a really long time on that subject. Housing is one of my special issues.
Yeah, housing's a big challenge.
It is. Let me just say, I have to do station identification here for a second. So you're listening to Community Radio, KPDO 89.3 FM, serving Pescadero and the South Coast. To contact us, you can call 650 650-646-KPDO. That's 650-646-5736. Okay, not to interrupt, but let's go on that thought. You know, you have an idea about not just an agricultural land trust, but the community in which it is, it's being built, you might say.
Yes.
And how do we house people and how do we work with the community kind of thing?
Right. I think from coming down, you know, just visiting Pescadero and meeting different people through a FarmLink program, I was introduced to the people from, you know, Pie Ranch, the Markey Guards. I met Tim Fromm and Paul Ringgold from Post and a whole group of people in the community. And you start to look around and you realize that housing is almost like an afterthought. You know, like here's a farm. We're going to need a number of people to work on this. And even the way the farm jobs are structured in such a way that very few people want to farm that way. I don't want to bend over for 10 hours and be paid very little for my efforts. And I think that part of the problem is the distribution process. You know, if you're doing vegetables and you work with existing brokers, they're going to dictate what you do. And therefore, who's going to get squeezed? The worker's going to get squeezed. Right. The owners of some of these properties, I think, are really getting squeezed. I think there's a perception that, you know, someone doing Brussels sprouts is making a lot of money. I think they're getting hammered.
Yeah.
They're getting hammered because jobs are going to other countries. We have a wonderful...
You mean by jobs, you mean the brokers are selling Brussels sprouts from someplace else.
From someplace else because of the IRS gives tax benefits. If you have your company own 51% in Mexico, then you're going to have different benefits than if you choose to stay in California. And California, frankly, I think we're missing the boat. We're pushing a lot of people out of the state. It's a great state. But unless somebody from every level of government starts to look at what they're doing to the small farmers, they are to blame for all the agribusiness in the Central Valley. Because here on the coast, there's, I think it's 30 inches of rainfall. It's like the perfect place to graze.
It depends on where you are. In the canyon where we live, it's 38 inches. So as you get closer to the hills, it's a little more. As you get closer to the ocean, it's a little less. But, yeah,
so it's
between 25 and 35 is about where it is.
Yeah, and then if you look at Bakersfield, I think they're at 8 inches.
Wow.
Annually.
And they are the ones getting the water.
They get the water.
And the big agriculture.
They get the water, the big agriculture, and they have, you know, the large unions that then turn around and define how these people live, how farm workers live.
Which in our case and every place is not so great.
No, it's not. It's not. But I think that some of the people that are, I think people in the community have been, you know, really the spotlight has been going on to different farmers in the community lately. At least from what I've seen from reading, you know, Half Moon Bay.
Well, sure, Red Markey. I mean, it was the water that brought that up. The water being not filtered and having nitrates in it and stuff like that.
That was a big flag. But I just, you know, had my water tested and, you know, paying an arm and a leg for a ranch. There's no other way to put it. And my water did not test very well. So now I have the knowledge that I have to filter my water for myself, for anyone else who's living on the property, which I'm happy to do. But it's a continuous thing.
Right.
And I think that the Markeys, as far as, you know, I met with the family and kind of talked to them a little bit about what they were going through. They were testing the water. They, you know, you have to test the water if you have workers.
Right.
And then
if you're drinking the water, environmental health makes you do it.
Right. I think no one in these farm labor housing, I don't think anyone's drinking the water. I think these people have been pretty much some of the people have been living for quite a while and know not to drink the water, hopefully.
That's true, but B.J. Burns has a great system and he does testing. Lots of farmers here and all the canyons and all the little rural water associations here, we're pretty familiar with that. It's something that's ongoing. We all have our own private water systems. So everybody knows about environmental health and testing and all that stuff. You kind of have to know that to live here.
Right. You have to be on top of it.
Yeah. So, but you're right. And one of the things that, I think that was the red flag, but then it started bringing attention to everything else that was going on with those particular farm workers, which included the housing, not having in some cases, you know, floors and things like that. Mm-hmm. So that was his particular situation. But aside from that, when I actually asked, I'm very involved in trying to get more housing here in different ways. I mean, what we want to do is use some of the heirloom homes, that we call it, people who don't come back for the summer, or they left a long time ago and their house is somewhat abandoned, trying to get some of these homes that are underutilized to get the owners to, like, help let us rehab them so that teachers can rent them and other workforce can rent them, that sort of thing. And then get replacement housing or repair for the farm worker housing. And if we can get a wastewater treatment in town, we can actually have some infill, a little bit of density, build some affordable housing in town. So we're working on a lot of different fronts to try to get some housing, because we did an inventory of the housing here, and there's only been 14 new affordable homes built here since 1982. Because, you know, Post has its good parts and its bad parts. Its good parts is, yeah, we don't have overdevelopment. We don't have all these vanity vineyards that other people do. We don't have all this overcrowded kind of condition that Malibu has and stuff like that. On the other hand, people can't live here. Mm-hmm. The sons and daughters of farmers have to move away. There's just no way to build anything new. It takes 10 years to build anything, even replacement housing. It's kind of ridiculous. It's gone overboard.
Now, that wouldn't be Post, though? Would that be maybe the Coastal Commission?
It's everything. It's the Coastal Commission and, you know, a very strong environmental lobby here. And then Post has taken down affordable homes from lands that it's bought without realizing how desperately we needed that housing. So Post has contributed to the problem. I think they're getting a little bit more aware. And things have changed over the last few years since Larry Jacobs became a director, I think, in part. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they have been part of the problem. And so we have to kind of start letting people know that, hey, you know, if farmers need to live on their land, their workers need to live nearby. Just as you were saying, you have to think about the infrastructure that you need in order to support the dream you have. You know, if you're going to have people there working, where are they going to come from? So people do need housing here, no question about it. What we're hoping is that we can help develop a walkable little community with more density in town. Infill would be the ideal thing. Mm-hmm. But right now, because of the county planning regulations and fish and game and all that, you can't have a leach line within 300 feet of a creek. And if you can think of Stage Road, North Street, Water Lane, Pescadero Road, it's all 300 feet from a creek. So it's kind of a moratorium on any kind of infill, which we need to change. So anyway, that's my little soapbox that I'll get off of.
Yeah, no, it's frustrating.
It
seems that people have been working for years, and what I see also is it's hard to identify who is accountable, mm-hmm. which is kind of similar to the entire government. Right.
Well, and honestly, you can't point a finger at one person.
No.
I mean, we're all part of the problem, and we're all part of the solution.
Right.
You know, and you have to sort of look at it and say, well, what is the problem? What is the need? One of the things that we did a long time ago was send out a questionnaire to all the people in the community, you know, who work here. We question people who actually work here and don't live here, plus people who live here who, you know, wish they had better housing, and said, you know, if we built some affordable housing here, could you afford this? Would you like it? It turns out there's a lot of people who are living in under, you know, not good housing. It's very crowded. It's mm-hmm. substandard housing, families that are bunched together, especially the farm worker families. So
could it be by choice, though?
It's not being willing to commute long distances, mm-hmm. you know, and that's expensive to commute
and
long distances.
And having a car and
yeah, all that stuff. A lot of the farm workers here, they use bicycles. I mean, that's their commuting vehicle, is a bicycle. So asking them to find a home in Half Moon Bay, that's asking a lot.
Right.
You know, they just can't do it. So, I mean, you have to look at the whole picture, but there's got to be ways of dealing with it. And the community needs to sort of take responsibility as well, which I think a lot of us are trying to do.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just getting into it, so I'm going to learn as I go along.
Yeah.
But I do think that it starts with the county. So if there's permits or something that you need, you start by going to the county. And then if you have to go to the Coastal Commission, then you go to the Coastal Commission, and maybe you just bring TV cameras with you because it's so fascinating. Maybe it should be a documentary of, you know, here's what we do
like
to small farmers in California.
Yeah.
While we, you know, pump all the water into the Central Valley and we let everyone do what they want to do there.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to kill the small guy because that's the way it works.
I know, because the big guy's got some money. I know, it's not good prioritizing, but I think it's lack of information. People don't understand what the problem is. The people who vote in large numbers, who are what we call over the hill, you know, they're not aware of these issues and don't realize that their vote for something might impact this, you know.
Right.
And they don't understand the implications. And that's, you know, it's difficult in a democracy to educate people. And that's something we have to keep doing. It's just an ongoing process. So anyway, sorry.
No, that's good. I think that's what this radio show's about, is letting people hear what is happening.
Right.
I think I never imagined, I kind of had a romantic notion of what farming is like until I came out here and started looking at how difficult it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really tough.
Still want to do it.
I still want to do it, yeah. Yeah.
And is it idealistic, or is it, you know, you love being on the land?
I love being on the land. I like eating local food. I love to eat. Mm-hmm. I love to cook. I do. I really like food. I also think that it's important for kids to understand where the food is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with my children, my parents never went out to restaurants. They were Polish immigrants. If anything, I eat out too much. But I think kids have to know. I have chickens at home now, you know, so my daughter gets up every morning to check how many eggs we have. And that's something that a lot of kids should have access to.
Okay, let me do this public service announcement. Run for fun in Sullivan's second annual Sully's to Surf Race. The 8-mile course, spanning from Sullivan's in La Honda to San Gregorio, invites bikes, skateboards, and horseback, in addition to traditional walking or running. Don your craziest costume attire, as prizes will be awarded. Race time is at 9 a.m. on Saturday, July 31st, and will be followed by a barbecue at Sullivan's. For details on how to register your team, visit sullivanslahonda.com. That sounds fun. I hadn't seen that one before. That's a new one. Okay, so I guess what I want to do is find out, what are your goals and dreams? What do you hope to achieve with this? Just say it out loud, and then maybe we can all support it, you know?
I think I want to just survive 1 year.
That's a very low, low threshold.
No, I think I really would like to meet people in the community.
Okay.
To find out what are the ways, when people get together, then they find ways to save money. So I look at this as, there are certain entities that always make a lot of money. Insurance companies, for example. The financial industry. With attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that people need to know, maybe they can find out by banding together. Plant can maybe get information on, I'll give an example of, you know, Blue House, and I think some other organic farms have been, targeted as the little organic farmers have been targeted for having interns.
Oh, I know,
interns.
I saw that, right.
And it's now, I think there was an article in today's paper in Marin, the same thing is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, every small farmer is not going to go out and hire an attorney to figure out what is legal and what's not legal. But interns are part of the process.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely, and on every farm. My aunt had foster children. Literally, she had foster children that were part of the family that helped in the farm. You have children, or you have foster children, or... you know, interns, whatever it is.
Well, especially in the organic farm world, that is such a common thing all over the world.
It is.
My nephew traveled all through England. My other nephew's going through France. And the way that they're getting housed is by volunteering as interns on organic farms. There's just whole communities set up for this. Some of them are Christian communities. Some of them are just, you know, organic farm communities. And interns are a part of the process.
Right. And they're young. They're young people. They want to intern.
That's right.
But to me, it's another example of the government stepping in and saying, you can't do this.
Like, right.
You can't bike on the street. You can't put your bike on a sidewalk. We've eliminated every form of exercise that is natural in this country. We have. And that's another regulation. You know, you can't have kids working on farms. You can't have kids helping. Well, these interns are college students. They're making a choice that they want to learn to do organic farming.
Right.
So what I would like to do is, you know, I can find out through my organization, let's figure out what it is that the regulations are, and let's get around them.
Right.
If it means that at the end of this you have to publish a paper that's maybe part of a university project, then let's add that.
So you're here to help find the resources for other farmers, not just yourself, to, you know, have the legal backing, the legal foundation,
The
like economic foundation, maybe a like a cooperative sort of a situation.
Somewhat of a cooperative. A cooperative sets pricing, and I think therefore it kills creativity.
Mm.
So what I don't like about co-ops is like dairy co-ops. There's one famous dairy name, Horizon, and then all the other farmers become nothing.
Oh.
And they go out of business, and I think that's a big mistake. So I don't want to go towards the co-op model.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should just be, it should be cooperation, quote unquote, but not in the legal co-op model.
That's what I'm talking about, is the community
cooperating
with and sharing our information and resources.
And putting our heads together. I'm one of these people where there is a rule, I will break it. I'll tell you how to legally break it.
That's what rules are for.
And I teach my children the same thing. So I think that, yeah, I'd like to help in those ways.
Mm-hmm.
And just to figure out, you know, are there equipment needs? If people want to do poultry processing, is there anyone out there that needs equipment to do poultry processing? Should we get together?
I think that that's a great idea. And one of the models for that, in sort of a, maybe not such a great parallel, but down in Salinas, and I used to work down in Salinas, and it's all ag, as you know. I mean, but they have it in an assembly line process, and I don't know if it's the best way to do things, but they've got people who will do the cooling part of it, where you have to pick the produce and then put it in a cooler. And there are people who just do cooling. And then there's people who ship. Then they're just the truckers and they pack and ship. And then there's people who just do planting and other companies that just do harvesting. And they have specialists that know how to plant versus harvest. I mean, it's really specialized stuff. But what they've done by having this huge like conveyor belt, you might say, of production for lettuce and spinach and all these things, is they have a very efficient process and a lot of cooperation. They're all linked together. Everybody has to work together and everything's all timed so that they can be as efficient as possible. And they have very good, very good produce brokerages. In other words, they're out there selling all this, you know, all these this lettuce and whatever all the time. So these people are in constant activity. They're constantly growing. And it's an all-year growing season, like it is here, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can just about grow all year long. And so something like that smaller here would be so great. I mean, if we had some resources here where everybody could use so-and-so's cooler,
yes,
you know.
Right.
Or everybody could use so-and-so's trucking system, whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That would be a big help to people instead of us all investing in trucks or all of us investing in coolers, you know? So that, to me, I think would really help us. Maybe what we really need is a good investment in the brokerage itself, you know? Who is doing that? Can we do a co-op thing like eLoans only e-brokerage?
Yes, yeah.
You know, so if my land's available or your land's available for lettuce and somebody someplace needs lettuce, we can sell it to them in our little, e-brokerage website, you know?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. There is a website out there now called Local Dirt, which is kind of interesting that I've been looking at. But what they haven't broken the model. And I think someone has to come in and break the model, get rid of some of the middlemen. Mm. So when you talk about the brokers, I think if you talk to any of the produce guys, part of the problem is the broker's so powerful.
Right.
And they set the prices.
Right.
And so then and they set the sizes and they set the requirements for inspections of water and everything else.
Mm.
They're large associations. So if you can get to vertically integrate, mm-hmm. you know, the way an organization like Cargill, they do everything from top to bottom. And that's what people out here should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at it from top to bottom, lend to each other within the community, the financial side. Everything should be all tied in.
Right. Okay, so that may sound like a dream, and it may be a little bit far off, but, you know, maybe your organization can help go in that direction, right?
Yeah, or we could fail miserably. Either way, it will be fun. I guarantee it will be fun.
And you'll get to know a lot of people. Well, what I'd like to find out from you so that, you know, other people who may be listening or who may listen in the future, because our podcast is something people can always download and you can put it on your website, is, you know, how do we get a hold of you? And, you know, what is your contact information? Who would you like to, you know, how would you like people to reach out to you?
Well, the organization is called Plant. Mm-hmm. We have a website called, our URL is planttrust.org.
Okay.
And we just have a placeholder up there right now. I've got two friends who are programming as we speak to get the website up, and the goal is July 1st. Mm-hmm. So it's Plant Trust with two T's, or Plant Rust, just in case you can't spell. We bought both of the URLs.
That's good. That's very good.
It's coming up July 1st, too.
Yeah, that's good.
So July 1st is a big day for
July
you.
1st is a big day, yes.
That is pretty amazing.
That's the way to reach me. Or you can just email me directly at janinap@yahoo.com.
Okay.
So anybody can
get
or
that
just
one.
See me on the streets.
That's an easy one. Yeah.
I won't have a cigarette, but I'll have a coffee in my hand.
And okay, good. So that's great to know. And there are people who will want to meet up with you, and now we have your email address so we can kind of get you in touch with some of the people like Tomcat Ranch, or, you know, you need to meet, I don't know if you've met, there's a whole little group for geotourism. I don't know if you're the least bit interested in geotourism or ecotourism, but we have a lot of destinations for ecotourists here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you'd be interested in that aspect of it, there's a Yahoo group for that, that includes Pie Ranch and Harley Farms and... you know, there's a lot of people up in Half Moon Bay as well that
okay.
are involved in that, if you'd be interested.
Sure, I would be interested. Once we have Savasco's kind of up and running, we would love to have people just come and stop by. I think there's nothing
good.
Healthier than kind of,
yeah.
especially for kids,
uh-huh.
to just get on the property and be able to run around without getting stampeded by cows or sheep, of course. Or attacked by chickens.
So don't wear red. Got it.
But if it happens, that's your fault.
Okay, great. So that is something you might be interested
in. Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. The eco-tourist part of things.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then there's so many people here. I mean, the garden coach who was on before, he's all interested in helping people in so many ways in terms of gardening, but also organic gardening. So are you going to have some organic produce of any kind?
Yes, we would like to, yes.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a lot of people trying to do that, trying to figure out how can I have a little organic garden that will feed me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I happen to just love Swiss chard, and I want to grow Swiss chard. So I know I'm going to have too much. Maybe I can share, you know, but it's not a farm because... You know, it's not like I'm going to sell it to anybody, but maybe I can put it out there that I've got some Swiss chard. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Yeah. So hopefully we can do some cooperative things. Now, didn't I see you at the Bally Conference?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And so, you know, there is a little directory, I don't know if you're on it yet, called Greater Pescadero. It's greaterpescadero.ning.com. It's a network of all the people who have businesses of any kind of enterprise in Pescadero.
Okay.
And so I can email you that link. And it's actually, if you go on to pescadero.com and then you go to the community page at the bottom, the first link is Greater Pescadero. And you can put your business or farm or enterprise or whatever into that and see what else is out there.
Okay, that sounds great.
Yeah, and that was formed from that group. That was one of the things that came about from that little group.
Yeah, that was a good meeting.
It was fun. It was very interesting.
Yes.
Okay, Janina, we have to get going. Any parting words? Any last thoughts?
We're thinking about possibly having a party.
Oh my God!
Is it also on July 1st?
We're going to wait 9 days.
Oh my God!
We're thinking of July 10th.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Nice. And if we have something, we'll just kind of open up.
Oh, that
the ranch and
so like a little open farm kind of thing.
Yeah, just an open farm, but with alcohol, because we do everything with alcohol.
So are you going to have a slip and slide down the hill? Because that would be awesome.
No. We're going to give people tweezers to remove the ticks.
Lighters. Oh, they hate it when you do this to them.
I'm just kidding. That's a whole nother story, the ticks.
Well, unfortunately, we have to get going so we can prepare for the next show. But it's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you.
Talking to you. And hopefully you can come back in a few months and we can see how things are going.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have more gray hair at that point.
Thank you so much, Janina.
Okay, thank you, Catherine.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Only so sour cherry on your fruit.